in re conservatorship and guardianship of Lyndhurst.
May it please the court. My name is Wayne Jansen, and I appear on behalf of the appellant Janet K. Lyndhurst. In this matter, both the county court and Joyce, I'll refer to her as Joyce since I did that in the brief, they both placed importance on the past proceedings, and in this matter that would be case A16-12. In that case, the contested and appealed issues dealt with the appointment of Joyce, a $3,000 payment made by Joyce to herself before the proceedings were commenced, and the access to a safe deposit box. Now, those matters were contested and appealed by my client because she was concerned about the hatred that was between Dolores and Joyce, Dolores' fear of the nursing home environment, and the fact that Joyce was left out of the will except for a metal flamingo and $100. And the house and furnishings were left to Janet. There was a fear that Joyce would deplete the assets of the estate out of spite. This court's ruling approved the appointment of Joyce, ordered both parties to be present as the safe deposit box was opened, and remanded the issue of the payment of the $3,000 as to whether it had to be returned to the estate to the county court for further proceedings. Those further proceedings consisted of a signing of an order saying that it didn't have to be paid back. There was no hearing, no notice, nothing. It just happened. The $3,000 was $2,000 for the staying with her mother for a month, and the other $1,000 was for attorney's fees that were brought out of the ward's funds in order to acquire the services of an attorney. No appeal was taken on that. And the other intervening matters were settled by stipulation. If you look at the brief of the appellee, you would think that Janet contested everything, fought to the bitter end. That is not the case. The accounting, even in this matter, was the result of motions to compel. It was given after 34 months of being the guardian and conservator. Okay? When the accounting was presented, the fears of depleting the estate were realized. Joyce did nothing to preserve the estate for future needs. She focused only on selling the house, but could not justify it. She never even considered any attempt to rent the home. There's nothing in the record that says that she did any investigation or did anything. The house was empty for 1 year. Then Joyce allowed Susan and Bob Kopecky to move in for 17 months. Now, the evidence from several independent sources proved payment of rent. The testimony of Susan, testimony of Bob Kopecky, Margie Wilson, and Joyce's own text messages. Those are Exhibit 50 and 52, show that there was a payment of rent. The rent was paid but never appeared on the accounting except for two payments, one on July 10th of 2017 and another one on August 11th of 2017. The only Joyce and Deb Strudel testified that no rent was paid. Strudel was at the residence talking to Susan and said that Susan denied that there was any rent. Strudel admits that Bob was in the basement, but she never took the time to get him up or go down to him to ask him if he was paying rent. He's an unrelated person. Susan, as you know, is the daughter. So her investigation wasn't very complete. But even then, Strudel said, well, if you're going to live here, you ought to at least pay utilities. And at least starting in December of 2016. But the accounting shows no payment of utilities by Susan or Bob. Nothing. Now, if the rent was not paid, then Joyce failed to make the house profitable. The prudent investor rule, if it says anything, is to protect the property and to make it profitable.
Wasn't there evidence adduced that there were repairs that needed to be made before it could be rented to a third party?
No. In the brief of the appellee, they try to make a big thing of that. With any house, improvements could be made. But the evidence by the witness on that issue was very clear that just as it sat, it was worth $600 a month, had been worth $600 a month since May or June of 2015. and that it had not been read. Okay?
But not if it was under threat of litigation, correct? Wasn't that her testimony?
Well, she testified that she personally didn't want to get involved in anything that was under threat of litigation. But not that the house couldn't be rented. The house could be rented on a month-to-month tenancy. There's nothing that would, litigation would impair the ability to rent to someone. And in fact, the rental could have been for a year, but it didn't have to be. It could have been for a month-to-month tenancy. The fact is that Joyce never looked into it, never gave it a thought, just kept using assets and hoping to eventually get to a point where she could sell the house. Her neglect to go ahead and do something with that house to get it rented, to make it profitable, is an element of breach of trust. And since she has breached her trust, she should be required to recompense the estate. In the case of A1612, during the testimony and such in that case, it was often brought up that Janet wasn't paying rent while she was in the house giving 24/7 care to her mother for 5 months. So it's not a situation where she wasn't aware of the fact that rent was a question to be had about the use of that house. Now the cash
payment... Can I ask you something? Mm-hmm. So you said that she is a beneficiary under the will of the house. So
Janet is.
Janet is. Mm-hmm. But Janet now today is arguing for dollars for the benefit of the estate that she would not benefit from. Does she even have standing to make these claims at this point?
Oh, yes. In fact, everything in the estate basically goes to her at this point, or at least a third of whatever's left. There was another brother that died just before this thing all started, and he was entitled to a third of the residue. Joyce is the only one who wasn't entitled to anything but the Flamingo and $100. So yes, there's other...
Is that in the record?
Yes.
Where is that in the record?
No, that there's a will?
Yeah. Is the will itself in there that lays out?
The will itself is not in there, but there is reference made to the will. And I've noted the exact location of that in my statement of facts. Okay. But it is in there that she was entitled to the house, etc. Okay? That's part of the reason why there was so much concern about whether the house could be sold. Because, in fact, she was entitled to inherit it in the end.
As if she'll get the house, correct?
Well, it all depends on how things work out with claims and such, but that would be the way the will provides, okay. Yes. Okay? Now, on the cash payments, there were receipts, but all the receipts are drafted by Joyce, and there's supposedly a signature of the person who provided the care, or provided the lawn work. But there's no corroboration of that in the evidence other than the statements of Joyce. And those receipts don't even say that it was for 715 D Street where Dolores lived. Okay. The payments for work on those particular receipts are even for a period after the time when Bob took over all that care. And there's two payments, one on August 23rd of 16 and one on September 12th of 16 of $50, which are shown in the accounting, but there's no receipts for those at all. At least that $100 should come back to the estate. The purpose of the law is to provide guidance for our actions, controls on us. In the first appeal, John Fry was the law. It was his recommendations as to one sister over the other that ruled. In this appeal, the opinion of Deb Strudel was the law. She said others do it. They let family members live in the house for 17 months while you pay utilities and pay no rent. In matters of this sort, you know, I would hope that attorneys shouldn't advise their clients to go to an HHS employee and see what the law is. The law is argued in our brief. We ask that the court apply the law here. This decision does not conform to the law, is not supported by competent evidences, and is arbitrary, capricious, and unreasonable. You should find a breach of fiduciary duty and direct a surcharge. Thank you. I would reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Joel Manowski. I represent the appellee in this case, Joyce Plackey. Contrary to, I think, his assertions, I think this appeal is really, in this case, the last several years, has been nothing more than an ongoing criticism by one sister against the other. ongoing casting of stones by one sister against the other. So here we are again on an appeal, second time around in this case. But cutting to the chase on this, I think the appellant correctly frames the issue on page 12 of her brief. She says, the issue in this matter is really whether Joyce took money intended for the estate or whether she failed to properly use the assets of the estate to profit the estate. I think those are all factual issues. And it comes down to who's telling the truth, who's more credible, who should the court believe? And again, the trial court is in the best position to make that determination. And when the court makes that determination as to who's more credible and what is the better evidence, if you will, then does that evidence support the decision? Is that evidence credible, and does it support the lower court's decision? In this case, it does. Again, Judge Parsley had an opportunity to sit through 4 days of trial originally, another trial in this case, the second time around on the issue for the repayment and whether the assets were depleted and whatnot that we're here for today. Judge Parsley sat through all that. She observed all the witnesses. And deference should be given to her conclusions as to who's telling the truth. It's unfortunate, not for us, the judge chose to believe the evidence Joyce presented, the testimony Joyce presented, as opposed to Janet's.
The court made a credibility finding with regard to Susan, but did it make a determination with regard to Janet or Joyce?
I don't know if there's a specific sentence in the order to that effect, but I think generally speaking, when the judge essentially, for lack of a better way of saying it, shoots down every argument, every criticism that Janet presents, I think the judge is saying, Janet, you're wrong again. Joyce, you're right. The evidence shows that you didn't do these things. I think generally speaking, this second round of trial dealt with whether or not there was a rental agreement between Susan and Joyce, whether Joyce was stealing money, whether the estate could have made more money if it had rented the house out, and whether Joyce truly spent money for having the lawn mowed. Those are kind of the factual issues that were presented. Appellee says, gee, you should have believed us, Judge, and if you did, then Joyce breached her fiduciary duty. But the evidence didn't show any of that. This agreement for the rental of the property with Susan, and again, referring to Deb Strudel, I think Deb Strudel, who was brought in because of allegations of abuse made by Janet, Ms. Strudel's with DHHS Protective Services, she did an investigation, and she, on the stand, testified, yeah, a lot of times people let family members live in houses. Why? You can protect the house. Make sure it's taken care of. And that's what was going on here. You have to keep in mind, Dolores was 94 years old, I believe, during the time that we're talking about here. And unfortunately, she'd suffer from dementia and Alzheimer's. And again, her lifespan wasn't very great. And Joyce's decision as guardian and conservator was to have Susan live in the house, take care of it, do some improvements, and I think she testified that she knew that it was likely going to have to be sold or the guardianship was going to be over. And with that mindset, do we put the money into it that Taryn Jones, the real estate agent, which Janet called in, indicated we would have to spend redecorating, take wallpaper down, take out a wall to get to a bathroom, get new appliances because Deb testified that Janet said, those are all mine. Okay, I get the fridge, I get the stove. I think Ms. Long testified that she thought it'd be about $6,500 you'd have to put in the house to make it rentable to get to that $600 figure that Janet says we should have been getting. And I think as the briefs indicate, Dolores did die early 18. Knowing that, you would have lost money on the deal. You put $6,500 in it, and you would have rented out for maybe a year, because then it's likely that things would have changed once Janet or Dolores did die, and the matter was probated. And again, rightfully, Janet would have had the house, and then it would have been her problem. But that would have been an investment the estate would have had to put in. And that investment would have had to been put in when everything was still very contentious. The appeals were still pending. Keep in mind that the appeal process didn't end until June of 2017. And we were back in court at the end of 2017. I think the prudent investor, in hindsight, Joyce did do the right thing. Ms. Long said we would have charged to manage the house. We would have required a year-long lease agreement, and let's not forget the $6,500 you would have had to come up with. To try to push that through court when the case was still on appeal would have been crazy. I mean, we talk about a prudent investor. That would have been the worst thing to do, and history would repeat itself. Shirley would have been challenged by Janet.
Although Janet would have ended up with the benefit of it because she was the house.
Possibly. Right? Or we'd still be litigating that issue. I don't know, but keep in mind, this was an extremely, despite what Mr. Jensen may allege, this was an extremely contentious guardianship. It's been going on for almost 3 years now, and everything's been a battle. I think the decision to simply let one sister maintain the house, keep the house up, and Joyce testified she thought that's what her mother would have wanted, and Deb Strudel said that happens, that was the best decision. And again, looking back, it was. The allegation about stealing money, this rent that was supposedly paid, again, Susan had her deposition taken, and I think she said that it was paid, but she admitted during the investigation by Deb Strudel that there was never any rent agreement, there was never rent paid. And I think their spin on that is that she was under pressure from Joyce. Well, the testimony is that Joyce wasn't aware of the Department of Health and Human Services investigation at the time Ms. Strudel spoke to Susan. So there was no pressure. Again, that was just an argument that's been made to throw people off the fact that the reality of it is when Susan was asked point blank by a totally uninterested party, she acknowledged that there was no rent being paid. And what's even more interesting is that during her deposition and during the trial, it was asked, how did you get that money to Joyce? How did you do it? And boy, we gave her so many opportunities to give an answer. And she said, I handed it to her. I gave it to her, I think, either at the house on B Street or Joyce's house. I gave it to her. Are you sure of that, Susan? Yes, I am. Are you 100% sure of that? Yes, every time. And then when she's reminded that Joyce was in a car accident and was in intensive care, then she changes her answer. The bottom line is, the credibility issue on that issue was Joyce stealing money. There's no question about it. The evidence, the testimony of Susan to support that contention was just not credible and totally unbelievable, and she was inconsistent, and the court saw that, or believed that. I've talked about the renting of the house, and I think we've exhausted that. I think the evidence clearly showed that the judge believed certain witnesses and made a decision accordingly. And I think that decision supports the final decision in this case. I mean, the credibility issue, the witnesses support this decision.
And we review for errors on the record.
Yes, and I don't think there are any. I would submit that this has been a baseless dispute that has dragged on way too long. I would submit the court recognized that. In their brief, and Mr. Jensen makes a comment that the court points out the historical procedures we've gone through. And again, I think the judge did look at that. I think the judge recognized that Janet challenged everything. I think the judge recognized that Janet said, I'm going to challenge everything. I think the judge recognized this was a four-day trial to begin with. I think the judge recognized this case has been going on for over 3 years. I think she recognized that Joyce had exhausted every appeal possible last time around. More importantly, I think she recognized that Joyce did all this even though she was back in California, not even living in Nebraska, not even caring for her mother. That was all Joyce was doing, all of that. I think the court recognized all of these things when the court made its determination on the credibility of Janet and her entire case. I think that's what goes into it when you are a trial judge, observing the witnesses, observing the parties. In this case, the court believed Joyce. For those reasons, I would respectfully request that the court affirm the lower court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time does Mr. Jansen have left?
May it please the court. Opposing counsel says that the judge endured the witnesses. That's not the purpose of this, of any trial proceeding. It is for the judge to listen to the witnesses. I think the order in this matter shows that maybe the judge felt she was enduring the witnesses. The fact of the matter is she only listened to two people, Deb Strudel and Joyce. That's it. And when we're talking about Susan said in the deposition that she had given it directly to her, when she was reminded that her sister had been in the hospital, she said, I went to the hospital on those occasions. We're talking 17 months worth of payments here. And the thrill of a deposition. Now, and again, Deb, rent as is. That's all I can say. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. Counsel's excused. Thank you for coming.